Okay, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Nunam Bet by the two dots. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the relationship between Bar Kappara and Rabbi. The last piece of the Gemara left off with a story about the wedding of the son of Rabbi, Rabbi Shimon. His wedding that originally he did not invite Bar Kappara to the wedding, and they later on relented and did invite Bar Kappara to the wedding. Now, in that question about why he didn't invite Bar Kappara, we had different dayot within the Rishonim as to why he didn't initially invite Bar Kappara to the wedding. Here, the Gemara's continuation probably has heavy influence over why Rabbi did or did not invite Bar Kappara to the wedding, and the subsequent stories shed light on some of this interesting relationship that Bar Kappara has with Rabbi. Bar Kappara was a Talmid of Rabbi. He is one of those individuals that sits in the transition generation between the Tanaim and the Amoraim, and he is quoted many times by the Amoraim, at least to the first generation. They're very familiar with Bar Kappara, and he was a Talmid Muvhak of Rabbi, but you can see here that he has a very interesting relationship with Rabbi and some interesting interactions with Rabbi, part of which were the personality of Bar Kappara. So here the Gemara says, Yoma de Mechayech Bei Rabbi Acha Prunuta Leol Alma. On a day that Rabbi laughed or became lighthearted, then bad things happened in the world. So Rabbi, in his position as the Gadol Ador, the one who was concerned for all that was transpiring to Klal Yisrael, when he became lighthearted or he was laughing and being a little bit frivolous, that had impact on his role as the leader of the generation, and therefore it had detrimental impact because of his lack of seriousness with regards to the issues that needed to be handled. And therefore, Rabbi tried to not get involved in frivolous or joking matters. So I'm relaying the Bar Kappara. So Rabbi instructs Bar Kappara, Lo tavdichan, don't get me to laugh, don't be a clown, and get me into a frivolous mood. Ve'vina lecha arba'in grivei chite. And I'll give you 40 sa'ah of chitim. I'll pay you off if you don't act like a clown or you don't make me laugh. I'm like, lech seymar, tochol griva deba'ina shakilna. So he says, I'll choose whichever ones I want to use, or I'll use the measure by which I collect the sa'ot that you promised me. So then Bar Kappara goes, shakol dikula rabo, takes this giant basket, chafye kufra, he seals it, he lines it with pitch, the sachafe oreshe, and then he put it on his head, whether he was looking like what normally would be a woman who is carrying her things on her head, or whether he was looking like a big sombrero that had room to put things in, but it was clearly some sort of dress up for him, some sort of clown get up for him. Va'azal va'marle. So then he shows up into Rabbi's house. Lechali mar arba'in grivei chite. I want you to weigh out, or I want you to measure out those 40 sa'ah of chitim that I am a creditor to you for. I want you to measure them out and put them in my basket. It seems like he was dressed up in a way that either Rabbi wouldn't recognize him, or that made him seem like he wasn't Bar Kappara. And then as he says this, Rabbi understands or gets wind of the fact that it's Bar Kappara, because either he mentions the 40 sa'ah or by the voice he understands that. And achoch, Rabbi. And sure enough, Rabbi laughs. Amar le. So Rabbi says to Bar Kappara, lav azartech delo tibad chan. Didn't I tell you shouldn't be acting like a clown? Don't get me all frivolous. Amar le. Chita derashina ka nesivna. I just came to collect the chitim that you owed me. So he says, I wasn't coming here to make you laugh. I'm just coming here to collect my debts. Maybe he was saying to him, you paid me off for yesterday, but today's a new day, and you haven't paid me off for today, so I can make you laugh today. Or, again, he was playing with Rabbi a little bit, joking around with Rabbi, and that caused Rabbi to laugh. Amalek Bar Kappara, the brate de Rabbi. Bar Kappara says to Rabbi's daughter, Lamachar, tomorrow, Shatina Chamra Berikuda Davuch, will be a kirkane dimech. Tomorrow I'm going to be drinking wine. Now, the girsa that we have in front of us is rikuda davuch, or be kirkane dimech. You can see that the Rosh had a reverse girsa, which is Berikuda Dimech, or Bekarkane Davuch. Now, as far as the father is concerned, whether you use the word Rikuda, which means Rikud, to dance, or use Karkane, which might be synonymous or similar to the word Lecharker, which is used by David HaMelech, when David says, Mecharker b'chol kochol lifnei Aaron, that he was dancing with all of his strength before the Aaron HaKodesh when they bring it up to Yerushalayim, and Michal complains about the fact that he's acting in such a manner, but Mecharker means to dance. So in either instance, with reference to the father, meaning Rabbi, he's saying to the daughter, I'm going to have, your father's going to be dancing in front of me tomorrow. And then, ubi kirkani d'imech. And what your mother is doing, Rashi says, bikarni d'imech is b'mezigata, which is that she's going to pour wine for me. She's going to dilute wine for me. Rashi's probably heavily influenced by the upcoming Gemara or the continuation of the story, which is that's what happens. That's probably why he defined it this way. On the other hand, if you look in the Rosh, because of his reverse girsa, says, b'rikuda d'imech, and your mother's dancing. And the Ron says something even more interesting. He says, "Sheimech mikarkeret umizameret." Your mother is going to be dancing and singing. So Bar Kappara is informing Rabbi's daughter that he's going to have her parents doing things the next day. Now the next day turns out to be the wedding of Rabbi's son, Rabbi Shimon. So Bar Kappara is basically preempting the wedding and saying, "I'm going to have a good time at the wedding, and I'm going to make sure your father and mother are also having a good time at the wedding." Now, Ben Alasa, Chadnei de Rabbi Hava, Ben Alasa was the son-in-law of Rabbi. It's not clear if Ben Alasa is married to the daughter Bar Kappara spoke to beforehand, or he's married to another daughter of Rabbi, but he is the son-in-law of Rabbi. Bashir Gadol Hava. He was extremely wealthy. Azamne the Behi Lula, the Rabbi Shimon Barabi. Not surprising, but the Gemara says he was invited to Rabbi's son's wedding, his brother-in-law's wedding. Amalei Bar Kappara the Rabbi. So at the wedding, Bar Kappara queries Rabbi and says, "My toiva. What is the meaning of the word toiva?" Called Amalei Rabbi, "Dachin hu toiva." Anything that Rabbi did to explain what the word toiva in that context meant, Bar Kappara undermined it. He was able to ask a question on it. So now the word toiva. Here we're going to see a series. There are a couple of words: toiva, zima, and tevel. All words that are used with regards to arayot. Over here, it seems that the reference here, based on the Rishonim, is the Toiva that is mentioned by Mishkav Zachar, that it's Toivahi. So Bar Kappara is asking, what does that mean? What does it mean, the Toivahi? What's the etymology of the word? How does the word have meaning in this context? So Rabbi tried to explain it, and Bar Kappara undermined any explanation he gave. So Amalei Parsheat. So Rabbi turns to Bar Kappara and says, you explain it. Amalei, Teiti de Bitchi Timrili Natla. So, get your wife, Tirmi Li Natla. She should pour for me or present me with a cup. And Natla is like either a mug or a kos, a goblet of some sort, we're going to drink from. So here, this is why Rashi gave the explanation that your mother is going to be diluting the wine for me. Because here, this is what he says. He has her bring him a goblet or a cup of wine. Ata Ramyele. She went ahead and she brought it to him. Amalei Rabbi Kum Rakodli. Then he says to Rabbi, get up and dance for me. Damer lecha, so then I'll explain it to you. Meaning that if you want me to explain it to you, you got to do a little dance. You got to get up and earn it. So then he says, hachi amai rachmana. Then he went on to explain it. Rabbi danced before him. The wife presented him with the wine. And then he says, this is what the Torah means by the word toiva. Toe ataba. That's the etymology or the breakdown of the word is toe ataba. From the word to wander or to move away. And by the way that it's explained by the Rishonim over here is that, see in the Ran, Sheminiach Mishkevei Yishav Alech Etzel Zachar. Why are you leaving normal relations and engaging with a male? So the Toivaz, Toeat Abba, that you are floating away, wandering away for what seems normal or what is normal. So that's what the Toiva is a reference to in this context. The way that the Rosh says it, the way the Ran expressed it was a more general question about leaving women and going to a man. The Rosh has been more particular about the husband leaving his wife to go off with a Zachar, which seems to be wandering off in some strange or unexplainable type of behavior. Right. So Bar Kappara, we know, is a badchan. He's a joker. He's a clown. And the way that the Mefarshim explain over here is that he's trying to enhance the simcha and to make it more fun and exciting. And so in order to do that, he wants to engage the mother and the father of the groom in the simcha. Many times, you know, that at a simcha that the hosts are not able to dance or eat because they're so busy with the wedding. So this was Bar Kappara's attempt to engage them and to get them to be involved in the wedding. Not that Bar Kappara wanted Rabbi to dance before him, but he wanted Rabbi to get up and enjoy and to dance a little bit in order that he'll be a part of the wedding and to be Mesameach the Chatan. So I think that's Bar Kappara's intent over here. He's not getting drunk, have his wife bring him the wine. He wants them to be a part of the simcha and part of the excitement of the moment. And so he's playing around a little bit with them and enjoying it and helping them to enjoy and be Mesameach the Chatan Bekala. We're going to see that not everybody liked what Bar Kappara did. The Kasach Rino, on the next cup, Amalei, my Tevel. What's the word Tevel mean? Now, Tevel is used in Parshat Achrimot to describe bestiality. Amalei, Kinyono Kadma'a. Evidently, the word Amalei probably could be left out. You could read it into it, but if you look at the next instance of it, looks like it's left out. This is all from Bar Kappara. He says, just like we did last time. You want the explanation, you gotta do what you did last time. What I told you to do, you gotta do. So then, Avad, Rabbi dances before him, the wife pours the wine. And Amalei, Tevel hu, Tavlin yeshba, mi, shanya hada bia, mi kinkulhon biot. So Tevel comes to the word Tavlin. Tavlin, there is with it. Why is this bia different than all other biot? You could explain it in one of two ways, that tavlin yeshba, which is either there is yesh bebia zu tam, mia beacherot, meaning it's a bitmia. Tavlin from the word tam. What's the reason behind this? And it's really a bitmia. Tavlin yeshba? What type of reason could be there for this? Shanya da bia mi kulon biot, that this woman would change from engaging with her own species and getting engaged with an animal. So that's what the word tevel means here. Tavlin meaning the word tam. What type of reason could you give for this? This is an inexplicable type of behavior. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is as a statement. Tavlin yeshba. The word tavlin, spices, but spices in the sense of a mixture. So here we have a mixing of different species. That she's changing this bia from being together with her species to go with another species. And therefore it's a statement rather than a rhetorical question. Amalei umai zima. And then what is the meaning of the word zima? And it's not clear here whether, again, in these latter cases, is Rabbi prompting Bar Kappara after explaining to him toiva, or the other way around, that it's the same story again where Bar Kappara challenges Rabbi. And Rabbi's unable to explain it, and then he asks Bar Kappara to continue. Amalei Ivid Kinyana Kadma. So again, this is what I told you before. It seems to be that all of that's from the statement of Bar Kappara, which is, he says to him, do like you did before. Avad. And then he did it. Vamalei, and then he explained it to him. So Rabbi danced before him. His wife poured him the wine. He says, what's the word zima mean? Zo mahi. What is this? Now, the question of the word zima, the zima appears in different contexts. It could be that Umala ha'aretz zima. That could be one of the references. Or the word zima is also used by Ishao Bita. The Torah in that sense of Arayot also uses the word zima. So over here, the way that the Mefarshim explained it is zomahi, that we don't know who the offspring belongs to. So if you'd say that it comes from Umala ha'aretz zima, it makes a lot of sense, because Umala ha'aretz zima is where people are promiscuous, and therefore we don't know who's the father of which child, and who are the parents because of this promiscuous behavior, because of this inappropriate behavior. On the other hand, if you say it's Isha Bita, then you have to say it in a more narrow sense, that if a person's married both to a mother and to the daughter, then how does he turn someone that is both his mother-in-law and his wife, Zomahi? What's the definition, or what's the proper way to address such a woman? But that's the idea of Zima, the conjugation, or really a contraction of Zomahi. Lo yachil ben alasad lemizbal. Belanasa couldn't handle this. He felt that Bar Kappara was not treating his mother-in-law and father-in-law properly. Come, v'nafaku v'intete mitaman. He and his wife walked out of the wedding because they were so upset by the behavior of Bar Kappara. Now, again, I don't know if this relates back to the daughter that he's spoken to before. It's a different daughter. But now, going back to the question of why Rabbi didn't invite the Bar Kapara to the wedding, there are two possibilities that are brought up by the Rishonim. Rashi focuses on the fact that he was a Batchan, that he was a clown, because the story immediately afterwards says that he was a clown in front of Rabbi, and Rabbi didn't want him clowning around at the wedding and making him laugh. So that's why he didn't invite him originally, but then he relents and invites him. On the other hand, others suggest that the problem was Bar Kapara's behavior, and that the reluctance to invite Bar Kapara was not from Rabbi himself, but rather from his family, who felt that Bar Kapara was inappropriate in acting towards Rabbi, did not treat him in a respectful manner, and therefore they didn't want to invite Bar Kapara. In the end, Rabbi gets wind of it, or Rabbi relents and invites Bar Kapara. But two subsequent stories right after that incident are what the Mishonim are attaching themselves to understand what was their initial reason as to why they didn't invite Bar Kapara. Now, by Ben Alasa, this son-in-law of Rabbi, what is Ben Alasa? Rashi says, Klomar minayin davi ashir. How do you know that he was wealthy? So that's the answer. The question is in the name itself, which is Ben Alasa, was that he inherited. He was the son of Alasa. He inherited a large amount of wealth. So we'll see that that might be the answer to the question. Or the more generic side, or the way that most read the question of here, my Ben Alasa, what was the nature of his name? Why was he called Ben Alasa and he's not called by his first name? The Tanya lo chinam pizer Ben Alasa et ma'utav elarot behen tisparet shel kohen gadol. He did not spend his money frivolously, even though he was an inheritor of great wealth, and people who tend to inherit great wealth spend it, don't spend it properly or do not manage it properly. Nevertheless, Ben Alasa, despite being an inheritor of a large amount of wealth, he did not expend his money frivolously or without purpose, but he spent a lot of money on this type of haircut that was similar to the haircut of the Kohen Gadol. Dichtiv, because it says in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, that perek that deals with the Kohanim, Kasom yichsimu et roshehem, that they will crop or cut their hair. Tano, and what is that? Kain lulinit, that their haircut was like a lulinit. My lulinit, am Rabbi Yehuda tisparta yichidato. This unusual type of haircut. Hey chidami, what's so unusual about it? Rava rosho shel zeh bitzadika rosho zeh, that the end of one hair reaches the roots of the next hair. V'hainu tisporet shel kohen gadol. And this is the type of haircut that the kohen gadol had. Now, why the kohen gadol had this type of haircut? Obviously, one is that this was an unusual haircut, but seemingly it was a haircut of the nobility, or something that only a Caesar or an emperor would have such a haircut. And therefore, it was appropriate that the kohen gadol, who is the leader of Klal Yisrael, should be presenting himself in the best manner, that he should be dressed, and his hair should be done in a way that is equivalent to that of the emperor, to that of a great leader. And Ben Alasa expended money to have either that haircut done or to learn how to do that haircut to simulate that which was done with the Kohen Gadol. And the Gemara sees that as being something that was laudable in terms of his expending of the money to learn that. As well as the fact that here by the Kohen Gadol, we know that the Kohanim are not allowed to allow their hair to grow out long. And they're not allowed to cut their hair too short. They have to keep their hair in a cropped manner. They have to get a haircut at least every 30 days in order to keep themselves, I would say, be handsome, but also in a presentable manner that sits somewhere between the service to Hashem and the service to the people. And so having a proper haircut shows that balance, not hair that's too long, not hair that's too short, but hair that is just the right size and just the right cut. All right, now the Gemara continues with the Mishnah. And the Mishnah said that if a person takes the nether from Tashil, that he's mutar b'dalata rimutza. That he's mutar with a gourd that is put into the coals, the ashes, to cook it. My dalata rimutza. What is this dalata rimutza? Amar Shmuel, kra karkuzai. A specific type of species of gourd, or it came from this location, this gourd. Ravashi amar dalata tmuna beremetz. It's a gourd that is buried in the ashes or into the coals in order to cook it. The Rosh actually narrows the machloket here and says that they both agree. The case here is a delata tmuna berumutza. Everybody agrees that we're talking about here. And the Mishnah is a gourd that is put into the coals or into the fire in order to sweeten it. Without putting it into the coals or the fire, it would not be sweetened. But machloket between Ravashi and Shmuel is this a generic name for any delat, any unripened gourd or hard gourd that's put into the fire, into the coals or into the ashes in order to sweeten it? Is that the name that's given to it? Or is this name particular to this species of delat? do you say that any dalat atmuna beremetz is called a dalat arimutza? Or do you say that this specific species, which is normally put into the fire, into the coals or the ashes, that's what's called dalat arimutza? And that's the machloka between Shmuel and Ravashi over here. Etave Ravina, the Ravashi. Ravina challenges Ravashi's explanation. This is a more generic reference to any gourd that's put into the ashes. Because Rabbi Nechemia Omer, whether it's a Mishnah in Kilayim or the Braita that's in Kilayim, Rabbi Nechemia Omer, Dalat Aramit, he Dalat Mitzrit. So Dalat Aramit and Dalat Mitzrit are synonymous. They're the same species and they are interchangeable and able to be planted together. But both of those are Kilayim ima Yivanit. They are both Kilayim to be mixed with a Dalat Yivanit and Kilayim ima Rumutza. And they're also Kilayim with a Dalat Arimutza to Yufta. That's a strong refutation of Ravashi's position, because here it's clear that the word Rumutza is being used with a particular species, because the Mishnah is talking about Kilayim and the nature of the different Dlaot, the different types of gourds that you have here, and which are Kilayim with which. So if you'd say that Rumutza is just a description of how it's sweetened, but not about a particular species, it's hard to argue about it being Kilayim with something else. On the other hand, if you say that it's a Dalat Kurkodzai, then it makes sense that it could be Kilayim with the other species over here. Right now, over here in the Gemara, it's unclear as to whether this belongs here at all. The Gemara here says Mishnah, but what the Gemara is about to quote is exactly the same as found in our Mishnah back on Memtet Amud Aleph. And that is, an Uder Mimasek Deira, in Asura Mimasek Retachto. If someone takes a neder from something that's made in a pot, is not Asur except for things that are Masek Retachto. Now, Masei Ratachto, in the Mishnah, Rashi, back on Mem Ted Amud Aleph, explains that the Ratachto is Davar Haroteach Gon Rotev. It's anything that gets hot or turns into a liquid form. That is what's called Ratachto. Over here, Rashi translates Masei Ratachto differently and says, Hainu Davar Shnigmar Bishulo Bikdera. Something whose cooking is completed in a pot. And it's got to be one of the five species of grains. So Rashi's definition over here is different than his definition back on Mem Ted Amud Aleph, which makes questionable as to why, first of all, Rashi changed his mind, but also as to whether the girsa belongs here or not. This favors having the girsa over here, because Rashi's giving a different explanation over here than he did before, which might indicate that this is a braita versus what was in the Mishnah before. On the other hand, Doran quotes the Yerushalmi, who says that Ratachta is Mefresh Bishami, Izu Masei Ratachta, Kagon Chilka, Tragin Vitisne. Those are different kernels of wheat that are broken, either split in two, three, or four. Vesolet, Orez, Zorid, V'arsan, all these different grains that are cooked. Vainu Kamarinu Asurla, Masei Ratachta, when you create Ratachta, Shem Shetzarich, Artiach, Levashel Harbei. These are things that have to be cooked or boiled for an extended period of time. And that's why they're called Ratachta. That's another definition of this Masei Tahira. Others suggest more narrowly that ratachta is anything that goes into a k'tera, that is cooked in the k'tera. Then, amar konam ayurid l'k'tera, someone who says, takes a nether, anything that goes down into the k'tera, sh'eni to'em, that I won't taste it, asur b'chol naseh b'k'tera, then that person is asur in anything that is done or made inside of a pot. So now, over here you can see there's a parenthesis with a star, and if you look at the parenthesis star, it says, pliya, klala mishnah azek, vashnuya b'mishnah del memtera manal. Question that we asked, this Mishnah is just a copy of the Mishnah before. For kochach ta'ot, it's rami b'mishnah de la'el. There's a mistake in the previous Mishnah, v'ikar Mishnah mesudar k'hacha. Either this was appended onto the Mishnah before, and it shouldn't have been there on Mem Tedet. I don't know if it belongs over here. Chen nira mitoch perish Aran. That seems to be from the perish Aran. That's the case with the Ran back on Mem Tedet. And Aleph does not explain this part of the Mishnah at all, and only explains it over here. So, possibly, the milat matnita and milat gemara nitpas chacha betaut. The word Mishnah and Gemara were put in here into the defus by accident. El shikod v'remalo and adur mimasek derad b'chol masek v'eda piskahu. It's all either a psak halacha, or it's a possibility that it is a braita. So, it's something that was put in here, but it's not really the Mishnah. It's a braita, or these are halachot psukot, bram. And then he notes here, need some explanation as to why Rashi over here changes his explanation from before. Even if you say that's a Mishnah and this is a Braita, still a little strange that Rashi changed his definition from one location to the other. Tanya, anoder min ayored l'kteira, asur biyored l'ilpas So kvar yerad gdera kodem shered leil pas, because it goes into the pot before it ends up in the opas. But if he takes the nether, mina yered leil pas. If he takes the nether from there, it goes into the opas, mutar be yered gdera. It's mutar with things that go down into the gdera. Now, first of all, the difference between a gdera and an opas is that, first of all, gdera was much deeper and much thicker walls, and seems that it was used for much hotter items and for longer cooking. If you have to cook something for an extended period of time or boil it over second period of time, like if you were making soup or chicken soup where you leave it on the fire for an extended period of time, you would use a gdera. On the other hand, the ilfas was used, which is thinner walls. It was a little shallower and tended to have a cover on top of it. That ilfas was used either for cooking things that did not require extended heating, or it was used to reheat things that were already once cooked. And so based on that, the nature of the nether, when a person says, "Noder mina yored the gdera," so then someone who says that they're taking nether for some things that are go down, yored l'kdera, then that person is a suba yored l'opas. Then he can't use things that go into the opas. Why? Shavar yarad l'kdera, kodem shared l'opas, because it was already in the k'dera. Just because now it's being put in the opas doesn't mean that's where it was only made. It was made in the k'dera beforehand, and therefore it's deemed to be yored l'kdera, even though it's now being rewarmed or finished up cooking in the opas. On the other hand, if he says mina yored l'opas, mutar be yored the k'dera. Then if he says mina in the opas, something that's in the opas doesn't mean that it ended up in the k'dera or will end up inside of the k'dera. Over here, there's a machloket amongst the Rishonim as to what the definition is of yored. And this also we'll deal with in the next piece of the Braita, which is hanaseh. And yored here is something that is in contrast to minha yored. So let's look at the next statement, then we'll come back to explain it. Says if he takes the nether minay naaseh b'kdera, he says he takes the nether from that which is made in the k'dera, mutar b'naaseh b'opas. Then he's a mutar to eat things that are made in the opas. Minay naaseh b'opas. If he takes the nether from that which is made in the opas, mutar b'naaseh b'kdera. He's mutar with those things or items that are made in the k'dera. So the Rosh over here brings two possibilities to explain what the meaning of yored is, and part of that will be reflective of what you think naaseh is. So naaseh b'kdera, if you look in Rashi, he says, legamre. It's completely made there. So if he says, mina naaseh b'kdera, then it has to be completely made in the k'dera. Anything that's completely made in the k'dera would be restricted. If you make it also in the opas, then it's not going to be problematic. That's why he's mutar b'naaseh b'opas. Anything that's made in the opas is okay with, even if it was in the k'dera beforehand, because it wasn't exclusively made in the k'dera. In the same way in reverse. If he says that I'm going to be asur, but that which is made in the opas, then it's mutar b'naaseh b'kdera, because even if it's finished off in the k'dera, that doesn't matter because it was not completely made inside of the opas. So the word naaseh either means to finish. That's what the Ran says over here. Mishum d'naaseh gemar asiya mashma means the finishing of it, and Rashi sees means the gamre, means the entirety of it. So the way Rashi defines it is naaseh means everything, the entirety of the process was done either in the k'dera or the opas. That's the nature of the nether when you say naaseh. The Ran says it means that you finish. The finishing touches or the finishing of the process is done in one of these utensils, the opas or the k'dera. Therefore, it doesn't matter if you then take something that is in another item or another utensil, as long as the finishing thing is not the thing that you took the nether from, even though it was in there before. But if you finish it off in the other item, then it'd be mutar. So now going back to yored l'teva, the Rosh brings two interpretations. I think they are reflective of naaseh. They're not what naaseh means. It's yored. So here he brings the first interpretation. Yesh mifreish that afilim achar kach natnu abil pas kagon shirat tchila l'kdera. Yored l'opas mashma shetchilat yiridato l'opas. So the one interpretation the Rosh brings is that yirida means that the beginning of the process is there. So that's as opposed to naaseh, which would be the finishing of the process is done. Yored means it's the beginning of the process. That's one interpretation that the Rosh brings. An earlier interpretation, he says that in yored b'opas mutar b'yored l'kdera, ki yored l'kdera ain't derech l'teito b'opas. The something that goes down into the k'dera, you don't usually put it into any opas. So then the yored will be similar to Rashi's explanation, which is ben naaseh b'kdera. Rashi over there says naaseh b'kdera means the gamre. It's exclusively done in that location. Mina yored over here, like k'dera, means something that is normally made in the k'dera. You don't usually put it into an ilpas. But something that is made in ilpas usually does end up inside of the k'dera. So the way to cook it, and that's why you get a different outcome here by yored the k'dera, which is something that's yeredik teira, because the process of putting something into the opas always includes in the process putting it in the teira. Whereas in the case of yered the opas, then he's mutarbi yeredik teira, because something that is made in a teira will not always end up inside of an opas. So those are the two interpretations of yered according to the Rosh. Either it means tchila, the beginning of the process is that way, or what's the normal process? The normal process of that which goes into the Kedera is everything, because everything goes into the Kedera, even though it'll end up in the Opas later. On the other hand, when you put, say, what I put into the Opas, that's not necessarily true, because something that goes into Kedera does not have to end up in the Opas, whereas something that's in Opas always starts out in Kedera. So based on that, he explains the raid that way, and then we saw Naseh is the possibility either it's to be finished or it means to do it completely. And that's why by Naseh, Kedera and Ilpas, if you take the netter from one, the other one is excluded. Whereas in the first case, that Yored is, in that case, something that ends up in an Ilpas will normally have started in the Kedera. On the other hand, something that ends up in a Kedera doesn't mean it started in Ilpas, doesn't mean it has to end up in an Ilpas. And therefore, the din is different there, where the Kedera includes all things, but things in the Kedera and the Ilpas. On the other hand, Ilpas only includes things that are in Ilpas, not things that are in the Kedera. Now, someone takes a nether from that which goes down into the tanur, he's only a sur el pat, because pat is the primary item that is baked inside of a tanur. V'mamar kol ma'ase tanur alai, he says, all that which is made in the tanur is restricted to me. Asur b'chol nasim etanur, then he's restricted for anything that's put into an oven. Now Tosafot over here already raises an issue with this latter piece of the Braita, which is, says Tar Chiyun, the mashna the chiluk ben yored ma'ase. Previously, the difference between kedera and ilpas that we said before was in the language of mina yored the kedera, umina nase the kedera. Those were the difference there. So over here, you would expect the Braita to say mina yored the tanur, umina nase the tanur. But v'amai tana kol ma'ase. What's the addition of kol ma'ase tanur alai? Meaning that he just should have said mina yored the tanur, umina nase the tanur, and that should end up with the distinction. What's the addition of the word kol ma'aseh? In Kim Reisha, then kol yored. Then in the Reisha, it should say kol yored latanur, and then kol ma'aseh latanur. Tosafot sees here some sort of incompatibility, because you're contrasting two things. You're saying yored versus naseh, but you're also saying without the word kol and with the word kol. And that's not clear which of those is giving definition or changing the meaning over here. Based on that, the Ritva actually flips the gears over here, and says that the gear is backwards, and that it should be like this. And noder mina naseb tanur, ein asur elo bapat. That which is done or made exclusively in the tanur, that's when it's asur bapat. Mina yored the tanur, things that end up in the oven, that's kol maseh. All those are other things, because things end up in the tanur. They're not always or exclusively made in the tanur, but they're put in there also. So therefore, the Ritva flips it because of the word yored seems to be more inclusive, and the word naseh to be more exclusive, as we saw in the previous case. In order to resolve partly the problem of Tosafot, and also to reconcile with the previous statements of the Gemara, he flips the girsa here in the Gemara. Alright, the next Mishnah begins on the top of the Amud. Mina kavush, if he takes a nether from those things that are pickled, in a surela mina kavush shoyerek, then he's only restricted in vegetables that are pickled. Kavush sh'eni to'em, asur b'cholak vushim. But if he says that I'm restricted in any pickled item, that I will not taste any pickled item, then he's asur in anything that is pickled. And we're going to see this is going to continue through the Mishnayot. There are a number of these items. The question is, what's the distinction between the two Lishonot? So again, here it's unclear, because there are a number of changes between the case in the beginning and the case afterwards. The first change is HaKavush with the HeYidia versus Kavush without the HeYidia. So that's one of the explanations brought here, that the difference is to do with whether it's a heyayidia, which means the pickled items. The pickled items are those vegetables that are pickled. That's typically what you pickle. Now then, kavush, anything pickled, not with the heyayidia, that refers to anything that is pickled. And the difference here is between whether you have a heyayidia or not a heyayidia. And you can see, we'll see in each of the subsequent questions of the Mishnah, that there's a heyayidia in the first instance and lacks a heyayidia in the second instance. The other possibility is the Lashon of She'eni To'em. In the first case, he just says Mina Kavush. Now that in the next case, he says Kavush She'eni To'em. She'eni To'em means that I won't taste anything that has any pickling associated with it. So seems to be a broader capture mechanism because of the She'eni Toein. And so because of the She'eni Toein, that's what changes between the first case and the second case. Not the Hei Ayidiyah, but rather the lack of She'eni Toein in the first instance, and then the addition of Eni Toein in the second instance. That's what actually changes the din between the two halves of the Mishnah. And then there's a third possibility here that the difference is based on the Yushalmi. I think that the Yushalmi says that Mina Kavush, Mina Kevish, in Asurla Mina Kavush Malayarik, Mina Kevish means the proper noun, that which is pickled, which is vegetables. And then the Lashon afterwards means the Kavush, or items that, anything that is pickled. So those are the three different ways to explain the difference in the Mishnah. Now that'll persist through the remainder of the Mishnah. Mina Shaluk. In Asur la mina shaluk shel basar. Again, shaluk, whether it means partially cooked or heavily cooked, but shaluk in general is a term that's used by basar, whether that's because of hey idea hashaluk, whether that's because you didn't add in any toim, or whether that's because, like the Yushami says, that it's like mina shelik, from that which is shaluk, that is, refers to basar. Now then, if you say shaluk, she'eni toim, asur b'chol ha-shlukim. As if he says shaluk, either without the hey idea, or with the addition of She'eni Toim, or the more generic Shaluk, like based on the Yushalmi, then he's a Sur B'chol HaShlukim. Amar Le Rav Acha, Brei the Rav Avya Le Rav Ashi. Amar Dikvish, Mai. If he uses Lashon of Dikvish, what's the din? The Shalik, Mai. If he does that by Shalik, what's the din? Ditzali, Mai. The Maliach, Mai. All of these instances, which we're going to see in the upcoming mission as well, what's the din? Heichan Mashmo. Which way does it go? Tibai. Tibai, we saw earlier in the Masechta. In Nidarim, Tibai means Teku. Now, we don't have a resolution to this issue, and since this is Nidarim, which are Doraita, we're going to go to Chumrah and assume that it does mean the more expansive view. The question is somewhat unclear over here, but we know that in Aramaic, the Dalet replaces the Hey sometimes. And so, when we say Dikvish, does that mean Hakvish or Hakavush? Is that what he means when he adds in the Dalet over here? Or we are unclear as to whether he's using the Aramaic terminology or the Hebrew terminology. And that's what the Safek is over here. Or Arashi over here says, since he's saying it in Aramaic, we don't know what the word in Aramaic, we don't know what the word has or the meaning of the word. Kavish have the meaning of just vegetables, or has the meaning of all pickled items? Because in Hebrew, it was clear to us the words or the way that they were utilized in the vernacular, that's what it came out to be. But in Aramaic, we were unclear as to the usage or the particular usage of the word, and therefore it's unclear. So one of those three different approaches as to what the question is, but the question revolves around this problem because it's being said in Aramaic. And the next Mishnah continues the same genre of what we saw in the previous Mishnah, which is Minatzli. In Asur, la Minatzli shel basar. If he says Minatzli, then roasted items, he means roasted meat. Divrei Rav Yehuda. Sli she'eni toim, asur b'chol ha'tzluim. Then he's restricted in anything that's roasted. Min ha-meliach, in Israel, min ha-meliach shel dag. He says, from the salted things, well, the salted things are generally fish. Fish were salted, herring, those types of items. Meliach, she'eni toim, asur b'chol ha-meluchim. Then he's asur in anything that is salted. The Ran here brings from the Yushalmi that b'chol ha-meluchim does not just mean things that are salted on a long duration basis, but even things that are salted for a short duration, for a short period of time. And now, the Mishnah shifts over and says something new. Dag, dagim, she'eni toim. The individual says, dag, dagim, she'eni toim, asur behen, ben gdolim, ben ktanim. Is it restricted to them whether they're big or whether they're small? Ben meluchim, ben tfilim, whether they're salted or unsalted. Ben chayim, ben mivushalim, whether they're raw or they're cooked. Umutar, but he's still mutar, bitarit, trufa. Ubitzir, ubimorius. And he's still mutar on all these items, the tarit shufa, the tzir, and the morius, which we'll explain in a second. So now, in this part of the Mishnah, it's not clear. The way that the Ran reads it is, dag dagim means he used both lishonot. He says, dag dagim, then dag dagim includes both big fish, small fish, and all these different preparations of the fish. They're all included under dag dagim, but that's because he used the double lashon. There are others that say that the word dag and dagim makes no difference. And now what the Mishnah is saying is whether you use the word dag or whether you use the word dagim, they both have the meaning of big and small fish and all the other different permutations that we laid out here. So it's unclear from the Mishnah if the reason for this is because of the duplication of the Lashon, dag dagim, or whether they're saying dag and the word dagim mean the same thing. And that's what it's trying to say, that we're indifferent between the word dag and dagim. That's somewhat unclear in the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah continues on. It says, "An oder min tzachana, someone who takes a neder from the tzachana, asur betarit trufa, he's restricted in his tarit trufa, umutar betzir ubemorius, but he's still mutar in the tzir and morius." Now the tzachana is, according to many, a large number of small fish. It's a collection of very small fish that one eats, as described here by the Ran. Tzachana, dagim ktanim arbe meluchim. That these are a large number of small fish that are salted. Ve'esh mehen trufim. And there's some of them that are already shredded or cut up. Elish ruban shlemim. The majority of them are whole fish. But happens to be, because there's so many small fish in there, that some of them are already broken up or cut up. So because of that, the tarita trufa, which is a larger fish, which is chopped up or cut up, that would be restricted because the tarita trufa is chopped up fish. Now, the tzachana has whole fish, but also some chopped up fish in it. And because of that, it includes the tarita trufa. So that's the question over here. On the other hand, the tzachana, according to the Balei HaTosafot, is fish that is trufin, that is mixed up or chopped up. So because of that, the tarita trufa, the larger fish that is shredded or cut up, is restricted. On the other hand, the tzir and the morius. The tzir and the morius are the brine of the fish. The tzir is the brine of the fish with the innards of the fish mixed into it. And the morius is just the plain brine of the fish. So now, nuder mitarit trufa, person who takes the nether from the tarit trufa, asur bitziru b'morius. The girsa that we have in our Mishnah is that it's asur bitziru morius. So, whereas the girsa in the Ran, you can see this, the girsa in the Mishnayot in the Mishnah is also a nutermin tarit shufa, mutar bitziru b'morius. That he is actually mutar in the tzir in the morius because when it comes to the tarit shufa, it's all mixed up and it's shredded up fish. But the isur there is because there's fish in it. But with regards to the tzir and the morius, since there is no pieces of the fish in there, therefore it's not included. But you would have thought, and this is what the Ran has to explain, why you have to tell me it's mutar, obviously it's mutar, because there's no fish in there. But you would have thought because of the tarita trufa, it's very well shredded or cut up fish, that it's so minced that it's almost like a brine already because it's so minced. It's almost liquidy in nature because of the way that it's minced. And then because of that, you would have thought that the morius and the tzir should be asurim, and that's kamashman, that they're not asurim. According to the girsa that says asur and tzir morius, that's the answer. They are asur and tzir morius because the tarita trufa, the fish that's mixed up and chopped up like that, has brine mixed up with it because of the nature of the mincing and the chopping of the fish. So therefore, it includes the other two items. Okay, Tanya, Rabbi Shim ben Elazar Omer, dag she'eni toim asur bigdolim umutar bigtanim. He uses the word dag, that I will not eat. Then he's a sur and big fish, but mutar and small fish. Daga, the female, shen eni toim, asur biktanim umutar bigdolim. Then he's restricted in the small ones and mutar in the big ones. Dag, daga, sheni toim. If he uses both of the lashonot, asur ben bigdolim, ben biktanim. And the chedeshir is that when he says dag, daga, we don't say that he's reversing his position from dag to daga, but actually he means both of them. And therefore, they're more inclusive. Dag daga includes much more than simply dag or daga by itself. Now, depending on how you explain the Mishnah, will depend on whether Rabbi Shimon Elazar is actually agreeing with the Mishnah or disagreeing with the Mishnah. Because if we say before that the word dag and dagim are interchangeable, then that Mishnah argues on Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar in the Braita, because here he says the word dag has a specific meaning of gedolim. On the other hand, if you say the duplication of lashon in the Mishnah is what gives you the fact that it's ben gedolim tanim, then Rabbi Shimon Elazar could fit into the Mishnah just fine. Amar le Rav Papa le Abaye, mi mai de dag shen eni toim gadolu. How do you know when you say the word dag, it means a big one? Dichtiv, vayiman Hashem dag gadolu vloat Yonah. By Yonah, it says that Hashem prepared or brought a fish there to swallow up Yonah. Well, any fish that's swallowing up Yonah has got to be a pretty big sized fish. So Gemara says, wait a minute, vaktiv, vayitpalel Yonah l'Hashem elukav, mi mai adaga, that Yonah prayed from Hashem from the innards of the fish from the daga, and there it's with the hay. It says halokasho dilmo plate daga gadol, that the larger fish spit him out, ubale dag katan, and a smaller fish swallowed him up. Now what's interesting here is that the Yerushalmi actually gives a definition as to what's big and what's small. It says that a big fish is anything that's over a litra, and anything that's below a litra is called small. Now, obviously, any fish that can have yona inside of it is bigger than a litra in terms of a fish. That means even the smaller fish, the dagah, would have been more than a litra. But over here, it might have to do with the relationship or the relative nature of it. The fact that he went from a dog to a dagah means when he went from a bigger fish to a smaller fish. So over here, the dagah is known as the smaller fish, even though it's bigger than a litra, because in contrast to the bigger fish, the dog, it was a smaller fish. Ella, now the Gemara challenges it from this, by the makot. It says, that the fish in the yor died after it turned to blood. Only the small fish died in the yor, not the big fish. That can't be, because it says the fish died in the yor. That means all the fish in the yor died. Ella, daga mashma gdolim u mashma ktanim. Daga in the Torah has both meanings. Daga can be a big fish and a small fish in the Torah. Ubin nidarim, halech achar lishon bnei adam. But when it comes to Nidarim, we always follow the vernacular, the way that the term is used by people. And the way people speak is when they say dag, they mean a big fish. And when they say daga, they mean a small fish. Anuder min atzachana. Amalei Ravina Ravashi. Amar harei alai tzichin mai. He says that I'm restricted in tzichin. What's the din? Tibai. Again, the Gemara leaves this as a teiko. And over here, the Ron explains what's the difference between tzichin versus tzachana. Rashi says, "Mi amar dimi dagim amash kamar milo b'davar acher, Dilma dami kaman damar min tzachana." So when he says tzichin, is he referring just to the fish in this mixture, or when he says tzichin, he means the tzachana, like we said before, the tzachana, which is this ground up or minced up fish? Is that what it's referring to, according to Tosafot, where we saw before that tzachana means dagim trufim, shredded or mixed fish, whereas the Ron said it was the smaller fish mixed up together? Which does he refer to when he says tzichin? Is he referring just to the fish, or is this a synonymous with the word tzachana? The Ron, on the other hand, notes that tzichin is mimitzar b'tzir morius solo. Is he restricted in tzir morius? Mishum achi kreid dagin ktanim kivushim tzachana mipnei shetzir yotzei mehem reichon nudei. Why are they called tzachana? Because when you have these small fish that are kept together, the brine oozes out of the fish, and that gives them a certain pungency or a smell that comes out of them. So therefore, when you use tzichin, which is more expansive than the word tzachana, is that focused on the brine that's there as well? And therefore, tzichin means not only fish, but also brine, because the brine is what gives it the name. Or tzichin, synonymous with tzachana, which means these small fish, yeah, they ooze, or there is this brine that comes out of them, but that's not the major aspect here, and therefore the Gemara leaves us the teiku. It's unclear what that lashon means. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Bet.